The cornerstone of all secret doctrines is sex. It is a taboo topic, a weakness that can lead one to stumble into fanaticism and ignorance. This is the stumbling stone of sex that Adam and Eve encountered in their fall. They fell not just due to disobedience, but sexual disobedience. At the core of all human endeavors lies the crucial significance of sex. Religion is no exception. However, the public has not been introduced to the sacred role of sexuality in the esoteric or secret knowledge hidden within every religion. Thus, in modern times, sex has become desecrated and defiled, whereas it was once recognized as the gateway to the mysteries of the divine. We must understand that being born again is an unequivocal sexual issue. This is why the seed remains in those born of God. 1 John 3:9 states, "Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin, because he is born of God." To be born of God means to be born again, utilizing the process of birth. Nothing is birthed without a sexual component. The same verse further implies that sin is closely linked with sexuality. The origin of sin can be traced back to the misuse of sex. When Eve consumed the forbidden fruit with Adam outside of God's commands, this is why the fruit was appealing to the senses. Sex always carries a sensual allure. Adam and Eve symbolize a generation of developing souls that had reached the peak of mechanical evolution. They were becoming conscious of their own identities and were ready to progress to the human stage. Essentially, they were innocent and unaware of the concepts of good and evil. Similar to animals, they had an innate drive to reproduce without the ability to reason. This natural instinct was overseen by Jehovah Elohim, which refers to advanced intelligences, souls, that had attained the angelic state and were in charge of overseeing the evolving and developing life forces on Earth. Once these evolving souls were ready for human bodies, they were born within them. Yet, being still innocent, they were guided by Jehovah Elohim. They were taught how to reproduce in a superior way, the way of a human to unite, transmute within the sexual act and reproduce. In ancient times, the male body only had to release a single sperm to unite with a single ovum, without the need to ejaculate millions of sperm. Consequently, both males and females never reached orgasm or ejaculation. Instead of wasting their sexual energy, it was transmuted into a paradise of body and soul. Earth was a living paradise. However, something sinister was at play as well. Something slithered like a serpent through the blood of this newborn humanity. Temptation, a great gift of Mephistopheles, was overwhelming, leading to sexual disobedience. This innocent humanity began to copulate like animals, a backward step, reaching orgasm and opening their eyes to lust, generating all the sin in the world. The gates of Eden closed, and humanity fell into perversion. The serpent represents the primal force in human nature that drives sexual desire in both men and women. It symbolizes knowledge and power entwined around the tree of knowledge. It embodies both the strength and the fury of the divine. When the serpent is balanced with chastity, it allows individuals to harness the creative and destructive forces of God within themselves. However, when temptation takes over, it leads to fornication, the act of climax. Fornication or orgasm has stripped men of their ability to procreate naturally, while women retain a mechanical means of reproduction through ovulation. It is possible to re-educate the body to reproduce without the need for orgasm, returning to the primal sexual system of Eden. Through disobedience, humans have gained a deep understanding of good and evil, experiencing both joy and sorrow. The time has come to break free from this cycle and return to the divine source, the Pleroma, embracing both knowledge and morality. To reach our origin, we must resist the temptation to indulge in the forbidden fruit of the tree of good and evil. Orgasm, though powerful and intense, depletes the essence of man in a moment of desire. Sexual transmutation, on the other hand, represents the elevation of human sexuality beyond mere animalistic impulses. This path leads to the true expression of human sexuality and the return to a state of paradise. Sexual transmutation is how one is born of the spirit. One is born again by utilizing the sexual nature, not through fornication, but through transmutation. This is what Jesus symbolized in his first miracle when he turned water into wine at the wedding. Contrary to popular belief, Jesus was not condoning excessive wine consumption at weddings. It is illogical to think that Jesus would perform a miracle to encourage drinking. Instead, Jesus was imparting the lesson that the inner Christ within each individual must transform the waters of the wedding into wine. The wine represents transmuted water, with the Spirit of God dwelling within the waters. The sacred act of marriage involves engaging in sexual activity without reaching orgasm. This process transmutes water into wine, with the wine symbolizing the blood of Christ. It induces a spiritual intoxication, a mystical unity, transcending the temporary pleasures and pains of the physical world. As Jesus tells Nicodemus, flesh gives birth to flesh, but the spirit gives birth to the spirit. The sexual act with the orgasm is a fleshly and defiled act of sexuality. The sexual act without the orgasm, with sexual transmutation, is a purely spiritual experience. Transmutation can occur if one is single, yet the most superior form of transmutation is only for couples. Transmutation is the expression of true human sexuality. Transmutation is the path to be born again. And it is the only path to be born again. Creation, in all its glory, is always the outcome of sexual energy. To create is a sexual problem. If an architect wishes to build a house, he must first create it in his mind. He must make a blueprint. That takes creative energy. We could also say it takes sexual energy, because creativity and sexuality are one and the same. Creativity is sexuality. When we understand this, we begin to understand what sex actually is. With this in mind, perhaps it would not seem so absurd to say that imagination is fueled through sexual energy, because imagination is a creative act. In consequence, the quality of our sexual energy is reflected in the quality of our creative facilities, whether it be in the field of business, leisure, or the pursuit of spiritual truths. To understand the mysteries of life and death, we need a fertile mind, because certain concepts are difficult to understand without a mind that is very creative, in other words, full of sexual potency. A mind will run on different qualities of fuel, but it is better for it to run on fuel that has been purified. Sexual energy that is impure, that to say, mixed with lust, is a type of energy that damages the mind. It results in its degeneration. Likewise, immaculate sexual energy has the capacity to regenerate the mind. Animal sexuality is one thing, and human sexuality is another. We evolved under animal sexuality. However, what is necessary in order to become a man is to enact the conduct of human sexuality. This is how the intellectual animal creates himself into a true man. Sexual energy is important to use wisely. To waste it is something terribly foolish. On the other hand, the sexual energy is something that cannot be bottled up either. Sexual magic refers to an ancient science that has been known and protected by the purest, most spiritually advanced human beings, whose purpose and goal is the harnessing and perfection of our sexual forces. It is called magic from the ancient word mag, which means priest. A more accurate translation of sexual magic would be sexual priesthood. sexual transmutation, sexual magic, or white tantrism is a very sacred and holy act, and therefore it is not something to be taken lightly. Those who wish to enter into this practice should feel that they are ready to enter into a pact with God. This is a permanent resolution to never again fornicate, never reach orgasm, never spill a drop of semen, not just for a month or a year, but forever. Sexual magic can only take place between a couple in a serious, committed, and loving relationship. This may mean you are married according to the laws of your locale, but not necessarily. Really, the true sacrament of holy matrimony is the sexual act itself, because this is how one actually becomes married to the other. Karmic relationships are created and sustained through sexual relations. Thus, it is stated, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Genesis 2:24. With all of this in mind, anyone who is able and willing can begin practicing sexual magic. Single people who wish to begin sexual magic must first cease all forms of sexual misconduct, fornication, and begin purifying their hearts and minds through the methods of psychological annihilation and sexual transmutation. These aspirants must wait patiently until their karma provides them with a partner. The student must wait until he or she has found someone to love. Sexual magic is useless if the man and woman do not love each other. Sexual magic is an uncomplicated and natural practice, yet at the same time it is delicate. Only short periods of connection are recommended for beginners, because the body must become accustomed to sexual transmutation, and the practitioners must develop willpower to refrain from reaching orgasm. Slowly, the period of time can be lengthened, and one should always pay attention to their body as to what is suitable. Cultivate love between yourself and your partner. Do not become identified with the sensations of sex, yet do not reject them either. Try to keep the mind in a relaxed state. Do not fall into fantasy or lustful imagination. This is not only a waste of sexual energy, it additionally fuels desire instead of love. Eventually, all manifestations of desire must be denied, comprehended, and eliminated. This is a method that is learned through time. The greater one can elevate their state of consciousness while in the sexual act, the more effective the transmutation of sexual energy will be. This involves understanding how to meditate. It is not necessary for a beginner to know how to meditate well, yet eventually it is learned through practice. A beginner must keep the act simple, to cultivate love with his or her partner, to try to empty the mind and open the heart. After some time, the couple will separate. If the man loses his erection, then this is the body's way of informing him that it is time to stop. Those who practice sexual magic must never reach orgasm or ejaculation. When the sexual organs become hypersensitive, it is clear one is approaching the spasm. One should stop well before even this happens. It is vitally important that no release whatsoever occurs. Many years of work can be lost in a single moment if one forgets him or herself. Sexual union is best practiced at night or at dawn, because the acts of creation always take place in the darkness. The cosmic influence of the sun prohibits the creation of solar bodies. Nevertheless, daytime practice is acceptable on occasions in which other times are impossible. Just be aware that only the comprehension and elimination of the ego can take place during daytime practice. Sexual transmutation between man and woman must never be practiced more than once per day, due to what is called the creative magnetic pause. The sexual energy cycles through the body every 24 hours, and after an act of sexual magic, this energy is heavily magnetized. Thus, to repeat the act again in the same day disturbs the natural rhythms of the body and ultimately nullifies the great potential of the sexual energy, or even worse, transforms it into something harmful. However, pranayama can be practiced as much as one needs. Many students find that pranayama is useful as an accompaniment to performing other tasks. During the act of sexual magic, couples charge themselves with magnetism. They mutually magnetize each other. In the woman, the pelvis emanates feminine currents, while her breasts give off masculine ones. In the man, the feminine current emanates from the mouth, and the masculine one from his virile member. All of these organs must be well excited through sexual magic in order to give off and receive, transmit and retrieve vital magnetic forces that increase extraordinarily in quantity and quality. In the home of Gnostic initiates, the objective of delightful dances, joyful music and ardent kisses, where couples come into intimate sexual contact, is the mutual magnetization of man and woman. The magnetic power is masculine and feminine at the same time. The man needs the fluids of his wife if he truly wishes to progress, and the woman inevitably needs the fluids of her husband in order to develop all of her powers. When a couple mutually magnetizes each other, daily business progresses and happiness makes a nest in the home. When a man and woman unite, something is created. Scientific chastity allows the transmutation of these sexual secretions into light and fire. Sexuality is both a creator and a destroyer. The creative forces of sex crystallize a new, superior nature within the practitioner, while the destructive forces remove one's inferior nature related with our evolution through the animal kingdom. This is the basis of being born again. This superior nature is collectively called the soul, or more descriptively, the solar bodies. These are three vestments of one's innermost that are formed through the saturation of the transmuted sexual energy upon three successive octaves of energy. They are called the solar astral body, the solar mental body, and the solar casual body, and carry out the principles of emotion, thought, and will respectively. In the current human, or better stated, intellectual animal, these three principles manifest themselves through three inferior vestments related to a collective animal nature. In some, they are referred to as the ego. Thus, instead of a solar astral body, one has a body of desire, or kama rupa. Instead of a solar mental body, one has a lunar mental body. And instead of a solar casual body, one has the animal will of a legion of psychological aggregates. The White Lodge has totally and absolutely prohibited the sexual spasm. It is absurd to reach the sexual spasm. Those who practice sexual magic must never reach the spasm. Those who attempt to avoid seminal ejaculation without giving up the pleasure of the spasm may suffer disastrous consequences to the organism. The spasm is very violent, and if the organism is violated, the results come right away. Impotence, damage to the nervous system, etc. Therefore, those who practice sexual magic must withdraw from the act long before the sexual spasm. Doctors know very well the reasons why those who practice sexual magic must withdraw before the spasm. Sexual magic must be practiced only once a day. One must never practice twice a day. Never in our lives must we spill the semen. One has to know how to understand this order of the White Lodge. If we cultivate those divine vibrations of love, we can then fortify and strengthen the embryo of the soul, so that later we may live that which we call love intensely. Love strengthens the embryo of the soul. When the embryo grows stronger, then we achieve the incarnation of the soul. Rare are those human beings who come to feel the divine loving vibrations that radiate from the embryo of the soul. What humanity normally feels are the forces of desire. Desire also sings, becomes romantic and infinitely tender. Desire is the most deceptive poison that exists in the entire cosmos. Anyone who is a victim of the great deceiver would swear that he is in love. Men and women, I invite you to love. Follow the footprints of those few in the world who have known how to love. Gods and goddesses make love in the matrimonial enchantment of paradise. Blessed are the beings who truly love.